Hello again, Hawk fans, and thanks for tuning in to the Kettle Club Podcast Network. My name is Joe Greenwich, and I'll be joined this week by a couple of standout St. Joseph student athletes. A little later, we're going to talk to Stephanie Kelly from the women's lacrosse team. She has won the last two Atlantic 10 Women's Lacrosse Player of the Week honors. She's totaled 29 points in her last four games. Her and the Hawks off to a 2-0 start in conference play. We're going to talk to her in a little bit, but first we're joined by Aaliyah Stokes from the St. Joseph's Women's Track and Field Team. The Hawks got their season underway not too long ago. Their first competition in over a year, thanks to last year's COVID-19 shutdown and the delay of the start of competition this year. Aaliyah, thanks for calling in and joining us today.
Yeah, no problem. Nice to be here.
You finally got a chance to compete last weekend. You guys ran at Franklin Field in the Penn Challenge. It's been over a year since track programs were able to compete. How did it feel to get back out there and run in a race against other schools?
It felt great, honestly. It was a little intimidating since we're not used to running at Franklin Field unless we're like doing the pin relays. So that's like a really big track to kind of be doing your individual events at. But after a year of not really being able to compete, it felt really great to kind of have that competitiveness back and just kind of seeing where you're at really with your training.
I am going to talk to you about Franklin Field in a little bit, but first I did want to touch on the whole idea of going a year without competition. And a large part of that, without really being able to train with your team, obviously everybody's training regimens, once they get back to campus, have been different, smaller groups, etc. But you're able to run and train on your own. It's one of the sports where even through the quarantine lockdown periods, athletes were able to kind of stay fit, stay in game shape, for lack of a better way to put it. How were you able to train during that time where there were no team activities from March until you came back to campus?
It was a little difficult for me, especially just because I had a procedure done in February for trying to at least come back in March for the outdoor season we thought we were going to have. So I was still kind of rehabbing during that time and getting back to just being able to be on my feet. I did end up getting a gym membership when that was still kind of touch and go with being able to be in those vicinities with all the guidelines and restrictions coming out. And I am, you know, local from Philadelphia. So typically St. Joe's is my track. So that was closed. So I ended up going to a lot of different high schools when they weren't on the track to, you know, be able to get most of my workouts in that way. So the hardest thing, I guess, was really just like with lifting, since, you know, we have such a huge, you know, state-of-the-art weight room versus like the gyms not having everything. But it definitely was an adjustment, but it got super creative.
What do you think is the most creative thing that you did during that time to try to get a workout in or to work on a skill or something?
Honestly, I think it had to have been just really trying to get these huge workouts in at like the little tiny home gym. So I was Googling, what can I do at home that would be the equivalent to this? I don't have a lot of like weights. So I was lifting like the most craziest things, trying to get the equivalent of like the weights I would need, like heavy duffel bags or, you know, water jugs, things like that. So it was super creative and fun.
And you're back for an extra year this year. How quickly after it became an option, did you decide, yes, I want to do it? Was it in part because, like you said, you had already been working towards trying to get back and then had everything taken away? Was it just you felt like you had unfinished business? What was it that made you think, yeah, I'm going to come back, I'm going to take advantage of this waiver, and I'm going to compete one more time with the Hawks?
It definitely was a really big part for it when it was more so like I have unfinished business. I have been running since like the fifth grade. And like I said, I kind of redshirted my indoor season because of, you know, my knee having issues with that. I had that procedure and then I was supposed to come back for outdoor. We got notified that we wouldn't have an outdoor. And I was like, wow, there goes my senior year. I've been doing this my entire life to kind of finish my legacy off. And this is not how I want it to end. So after rehabbing and getting that okay, that I am feeling better, I can run pain-free, I was like, I want to come back and finish this the right way.
You just mentioned your legacy. Part of that includes some school records. How does it feel to know that, you know, your name is a top the list with your relay mates to know that no one in school history has ever done those races quicker than you guys did.
I think it's kind of awesome. You know, this is kind of one of the biggest things I've been a part of. And as much as track is an individual sport, it is still very much a team sport at the same time. So with our 4x1, having one of the school's relays and the 4x2 as well, it's a great feeling to kind of be a part of something that big and that is going down in the literal history books. You know, it'll be a bittersweet moment if someone does break our record. But as of right now, I love having that record, and it really makes it feel all, you know, worthwhile.
Trying to find a place to train and doing all those rehab workouts is not all that you did during that so-called lockdown quarantine period. You were very active with community service. You organized a march to campus. You want to tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, sure. So I got my bachelor's in criminal justice. So obviously, you know, social injustices are very important to me because of my, you know, background with that academically, but also because, you know, I am a Black woman in America. So seeing all the, you know, social injustices happening, it was kind of scary with the bigger protests that were happening, with seeing all the things on the news with protesters being hurt, officers being hurt, et cetera. So I thought the best way that I felt like I could also be a part of, you know, being a part of something bigger than myself while also kind of doing it in a safe way in a community that I'm familiar with, was to organize a solidarity march where, you know, it's the key purpose was to be peaceful, to stand in solidarity with everything that was happening, especially with George Floyd at that point of time. So we organized the march where we walked up from the Overbrook train stations through campus and back down. We had held it in the middle of campus. We took some time to actually, you know, kneel for the moments that corresponded with how long George Floyd was down, and it was really impactful. And I was surprised to have the outcome that I did, just because of it was, you know, still the beginning of quarantine and I wasn't really sure who was local, but it turned out beautifully and it was really impactful for a lot of us.
Yeah, I was just going to ask, you guys had pretty good numbers, especially considering that was probably the first time a lot of the St. Joe's community that was involved with the march had been on campus in months. So how did it feel from the standpoint of knowing that this was important to see that kind of support in a time that was just very difficult and everybody's concerned about, you know, being around other people, but still wanting to have their voices heard? How did it feel for you as an organizer to see such widespread support in that sort of a time?
It felt amazing, just because simply, like, I feel like there were so many people that I have never spoke to there before, and just posting on Facebook groups, if you're interested, contact me for information. And so many people reached out. I really want to be a part of this. I'm a part of this community. You know, how can I get there? How can I show my support? So it was really heartwarming and inspiring, really, that, you know, people in my community, even though they may not look like me, may not experience the same things that I do, still cared for this issue just as much as I did. And they wanted to show their support. They wanted to show their solidarity. And it was a really great feeling.
Is there anything more in the future for you? You said you majored in criminal justice. Is this something that you see yourself taking up as a career, or is something that is just going to remain a part of your life moving forward?
I definitely think so. So I'm actually getting my master's in criminal justice right now. Once I graduate in May, I do plan on going to law school and hopefully focusing on advocacy law or civil law. So, you know, the root of these problems would be my focus in the courtroom and, you know, everything I do as an adult in my, you know, hopeful, you know, lawyer career. So, you know, this march and the solidarity walk was one step, but I feel like I can take it to a whole nother level in my actual field. So I'm looking forward to that.
Well, before you head off to law school, you've still got some time left on the track with the Hawks. You mentioned being from Philadelphia, your local product. You mentioned running at Franklin Field. The last 2 years it hasn't happened, but the Penn Relay is one of the biggest events in the sport of track and field. Did you get to compete in the Penn Relays in high school?
Yes, even in elementary school, we were there.
Oh, wow.
I have been doing Penn Relays all my life. So, like, last year, it was so crazy just not having them. It was like something you kind of almost take for granted as something you always get to do. And not getting to do them was really sad.
How does it feel for you to get out there and compete? Obviously, they have the international races that go on that last day, and the crowd is always vibrant. People from all over the world come to see the Penn Relays. I remember being in the city the night of one of the events, and you just see all the different jackets from all the different schools. You see people with the flags. What does it feel like to be a part of that environment and to know that you're doing it in your hometown? Like, you didn't really have to even take a big trip or travel somewhere. This is a thing that happens in Philadelphia every year.
It's exciting. Like I said, I almost was taking it for granted just because I've done it for so long. But when you really reflect on how big of an event this is and how people come from Jamaica and literally all over the world to compete, and that just broadens who you're competing against. We're competing against the best. And it makes you kind of work harder in that regard, knowing that people are coming from all over to compete against you. You're competing against them. So it's time to kind of bring the best out of you.
Women's track and field heads back to Franklin Field this weekend. It's part of the Philadelphia Big Five meet. Aaliyah Stokes, thank you for joining us. Good luck this weekend. Good luck the rest of the year. And thanks again for joining us here on the Kettle Club Podcast Network.
Thank you.
The Kettle Club Podcast Network is brought to you by Rothman Orthopedics. Rothman Orthopedics, the official team physicians of your St. Joseph's Hawks, provides the region with unmatched orthopedic care. For more information or to schedule an appointment, visit www.rothmanortho.com. For orthopedic excellence, think Rothman first. And also by Univest. Handle all your banking remotely with the Univest mobile platform. Easy, convenient, and secure, because life needs a little more wow. Live life, stay connected with Univest. Univest Bank and Trust Company, member FDIC. We're back here on the Kettle Club Podcast Network, joined now by the two-time reigning Atlantic 10 Women's Lacrosse Player of the Week, Steph Kelly. Steph, thanks for joining us this morning.
Yeah, no problem, Jerry. Thanks for having me.
You know, you guys are off to a pretty good start in conference play. You're 2-0, but after last year, I feel like we talked to everyone about this, but you were prepared to play a game, you know, the day after the world shut down. Specifically a game where you were playing to raise awareness for the bushfires that were going on back in your native Australia. You know, I think people might forget about that because it was only a year ago, but in our minds, it might've been 5-10 years ago. What was your first thought when everything shut down? You'd been building up for that game for many reasons, but what was your first thought and feeling way back when everything shut down for the season?
You know, I feel like that was the time around spring break. So initially the school postponed it for 2 weeks. And we were told, you know, just wash your hands. It's like nothing else. We'll be back in 2 weeks, ready to go and like continue this journey on to the A10 championship. You know, that was our goal. But when we did get final word that like COVID had really struck and our season was going to be ended, it was really emotional time because last year we all felt it on the team. We were all building and we were ready to take on A10s. We were one game away from A10s. And, you know, it was really emotional time because we have a really good team culture on our team and everyone is just like sisters. And over the past, it's been full year round now. I think the past year, everyone's been working just as hard. We basically have the same team as last year with a few additions. And we're feeling really good right now. It's really exciting. And I think everyone has that sense of loss from last year and everyone's ready to fight for that this year and step it up.
So once everything shut down and school moved online, did you go back home to Australia?
Yes. So I did wait around for a little bit because I just wasn't ready to leave. I wasn't ready to believe that our season was actually done. So I waited, I think it was about 10 days. And I bought my flight 2 days before I had to go and went back to Australia and got a nice long summer break at home. But unfortunately it was winter, so it was cold.
Was there a point where you were afraid you might not be able to come back? I know that along the lines of what you said, we all thought this was going to be, all right, you know what, we're going to shut down till Easter, or all right, maybe it's going to be a month or two. And here we are over a year later with a lot of stuff still not where we wanted to be. Was there a point where you were afraid you might not be able to make it back into the country?
Yeah, 100%. Australia was in very harsh lockdown laws. With COVID, we were locked down. We had several different kinds of lockdowns. And when I was there, I was lucky enough to get in a day before mandatory hotel quarantine came in. So I was lucky enough to do police enforced quarantine at my house, but I was really secluded to my room. If I'd gotten into Australia the day after, I would have been forced to go to a hotel and do 2 weeks there. Luckily enough, I missed that, but Australia was very, very strict trying to leave the country to come back to the US. With the Australian government, you had to apply to leave, and that took 6 weeks to register. And then once you heard back from that, it was a whole deal. There were many things that we had to do. I had to prove that I was a resident in America, and I had to prove that I was a student athlete over here. And it all had to be passed through the Australian government in order for me to leave the country. But getting back into America wasn't as hard as it was to actually leave Australia.
All right. You said police enforced. Does that mean a police car outside the house, and if you step outside, trouble ensues? Like, how strict are we talking here?
So it was, I did the 14 days at my house in Melbourne. And when I got off the flight from LA, we had to write down where we were staying, had to acknowledge that we were in a mandatory isolation where we couldn't leave our house. So basically the Victoria Police had all of our information, and they were doing checkups to make sure that you were home at the registered address. And if you weren't, it was a $19,500 fine.
Yikes.
Yeah. So you didn't leave home. I did not leave home once.
Well, good for you for keeping with that. So once you got out of your isolation, what were you able to do to stay fit, stay in shape for what you were hoping was going to be the 2021 season? What were you able to do by yourself down in Australia, or were you able to find others to train with within the rules that were in place in the country?
So once I was out of isolation, I went back into club training and Aussie squad training with the girls back home. So we were meeting, I think it was 3 times a week at this point. So we were getting in lacrosse sessions, running sessions. Gyms were closed at this point, so it was sort of at home gym equipment to be able to do our lift. But I was still being like getting on my stick, training with the Australian women's squad, which was really exciting. Like, I love playing Aussie lax, so that was so much fun to get back into that. But then COVID numbers were just rising, so eventually that's when Melbourne turned on the really, really strict lockdown measures and all sporting activities were cancelled. So that was a little bit disheartening. And I think I was home for maybe 4 months, and for 2 of those months I was able to do lacrosse practice and stuff. But after that, it was more individual. You weren't allowed to leave like a 5 kilometer radius from your house, but luckily enough, my lacrosse club was within that. So I was still able to do the specified exercise time, which was really helpful. But yeah, coming back over was an adjustment in itself.
Well, you did make it back. And speaking of an adjustment, all the training rules were very different when you got back, with the small groups and what you were allowed to do and for how long. How much of an adjustment was that? And at this point, has that become normal to you?
It was very much an adjustment. Going from every other year, being able to train every day with 40 of your best mates, was really tough to narrow that down to only being in groups of 10. You were really confined to that group. You did the running, you did lacrosse, you did lift, all only within that group. So that was quite difficult because you weren't able to develop those on-field relationships with other people on the team. Eventually they did get bigger, but for the first couple of weeks, it was, yeah, an adjustment, I think, is an understatement, because it was just very taxing not being able to, you're able to rely on your whole team, but you weren't physically able to do so. And I think that was the toughest thing for our team, because we are a very close-knit team. So not being able to talk to anyone that you wanted or hang out or train with anyone that you wanted was the biggest hump that we had to get over.
Finally, the game started. You got into February. You've been playing for a couple of months now. You just started Atlantic 10 play, and you personally have heated up just in time. 29 points over your last four games, the last two Atlantic 10 Player of the Week awards. Have you been doing anything different the last couple weeks? Has it been kind of just getting into a game rhythm, or is it just sometimes you pass the ball to somebody and sometimes they score, sometimes your own shots find the net and sometimes they don't? What's been the difference for you the last couple of weeks compared to the first couple of weeks?
I think coming into this season, it's taken our whole team, you know, to warm up a little bit. Our fall wasn't like a regular fall. We weren't able to get those baseline functions in every aspect of our game. But luckily enough, we were able to come back as a team, lift as a team, train as a team, and practice as a team. And I think the out-of-conference games have really led up to A-10s this past 2 weeks. And we have really been pushing one another. I think our defense is one of the toughest defenses that we play in every game. So every day they're pushing us and we're pushing them. And I think as a whole, we're all just getting better and we're striving to be better because we have that sense of missing out from last season. And we're just really hungry for that A-10 championship this year.
You mentioned having mostly the same team intact, thanks in large part to the COVID relief waiver from the NCAA. How big of a boost is that for you guys? How much of an advantage do you have, especially in a year where, you know, the preseason was basically non-existent and, you know, all the training is different? How much of an advantage is it for you guys to have all been playing together for years when you jump into your games and then into league play?
You know, it's massive. Having Platt, Bridget, Pash, and Penny all come back, you've got right there, you've got 4 years of experience. You've got 3 years of chemistry between my class and their class, not to mention everyone else's chemistry with them. And I think on the field, it's massive. Having their strength, their knowledge, their experience, and again, their chemistry just helps our team and pushes us forward. And it's an opportunity that not every team has. So I think we're really lucky that we have their experience back on the field. And I think it's really going to be our advantage when we go up against teams like UMass, Richmond, and any team in the A-10. And I think it already has for the past two games.
Every year, the goal is to win the Atlantic 10. And for every year you've been here, the team has made it to the Atlantic 10 tournament. Maybe the answer is what you just said, but what do you think it is about this year's team that makes you think you can get back to that tournament, as fewer teams will be in this year, so it's a little more difficult to make it? But what is it about this year's team that makes you think you can make it back and take that next step and win the whole thing?
I think the best part about it is that we're not our best right now. We still have room to improve, room to develop, and we are seeing the best parts of our games, but we still haven't put the best parts of our games into a 60-minute game of lacrosse. So when we do get that 60 minutes, we're almost there. We're not there just yet, but I feel like we're going to be there when the time comes, and that's all that matters at the end of the day. All that matters is getting another goal over our opponent, and hopefully that's what's going to happen in the A-10 championship.
The women's lacrosse team hosts Duquesne at Sweeney Field on Saturday afternoon. Steph Kelly, thanks for calling in. Good luck Saturday. Good luck the rest of the season. And we hope to talk to you again, maybe after an A-10 title. Who knows?
Thanks, Jared. Go Hawks.
And thank you for tuning in to the Kettle Club Podcast Network. We'll see you next time. Be sure to subscribe to the Kettle Club Podcast Network on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or the TuneIn app. You can also find us at sguhawks.com/podcasts.